Welcome back to Bitcoin Builders. It has been another consequential week. So today on the show, we're covering recent price action, updates on mining, and of course, the latest in the BRC20 debate. Bitcoin Builders is a show all about the incredible creative and entrepreneurial energy around Bitcoin and Lightning right now, and it is made possible by In Wolf's Clothing. Wolf is the first startup accelerator entirely dedicated to Bitcoin and Lightning. Check them out at wolfnyc.com, and thanks to them for supporting the show. It's Sunday, May 14th. This is Bitcoin Builders. Let's go. All right, friends, welcome back to the Bitcoin Builders Weekly Recap. Somehow, despite it being May, we are still getting kids' sicknesses, so my voice might sound a little bit off, but we're going to persevere. Now, I'm also really excited for the upcoming week of Bitcoin Builders. We've got a great interview on Tuesday with a very well-known builder, and then later in the week, we'll have a primer on Noster. But today, we are checking in on the last week of Bitcoin, and we start, if for no other reason than to get it out of the way, with price. Long and short of it is that Bitcoin prices have slumped. We have fallen off that 30,000 range and gone down into the 26 and 27,000s. There are a number of possible explanations. One is that while the failure of First Republic Bank had led to some resurgence of the long Bitcoin short the bankers narrative, that kind of faded this week. And then coming out of last weekend, concern around market liquidity was palpable. Binance halted withdrawals twice on Sunday, a week ago Sunday, and a 3% premium on Binance US led some traders to speculate a major market maker had been carried out on a stretcher. On Monday, we got the answer via Bloomberg reporting, with both Jane Street and Jump Trading deciding to wind back their U.S. market-making activities. Since then, price action has been down only, reaching a low of 26,400 on Thursday. Noel Acheson, the author of the Crypto is Macro Now newsletter, also wrote a thread about this weekend. She says, Bitcoin has seriously underperformed stocks, bonds, and gold over the past month. And while I hate to be a downer, there are still more headwinds than tailwinds at the moment, from the macro narrative, market structure, and regulatory hostility weather systems. She argues that the Bitcoin headwinds include 1, a diminished likelihood of rate cuts anytime soon, 2, a likely debt ceiling agreement leading to a withdrawal of macro liquidity, 3, this withdrawal of market makers in the Bitcoin space, 4, network congestion, which obviously we'll get into in just a little bit, 5, I thought this one was interesting. She writes, President Biden's extraordinary tweet implying that large crypto holders were tax dodgers, I mean, what? Could encourage some investors to sit this out for a while. No one wants to be the subject of an IRS probe. 6, meme coin frothiness that could be transmitting a market top message. And 7, now refuted reports that the US government was about to offload seized Bitcoin. Now, whatever the cause, in terms of aligning price with on-chain data, Glassnode writes, the cost basis for Bitcoin short-term holders is hovering around 25,200, representing break-even for recent buyers. Will Bitcoin reach 25,200 and find support this round? Checkmate says, Bitcoin charts I'm watching are all about short-term holders. But this being a show about building, ultimately we don't care that much about price in the short term, so let's move over to a couple updates on mining. Publicly listed Bitcoin miner Marathon Digital has received another subpoena from the SEC, questioning whether they are in violation of federal securities laws regarding related party transactions. Marathon had issued 6 million shares of restricted common stock related to its facility in Hardin, Montana. Marathon claimed these transactions were exempt from registration. The miner had first received a subpoena on this matter back in November 21 and said it was cooperating with the SEC. Alongside disclosing the subpoena, Marathon also reported their quarterly earnings this week, which showed a net loss of $7.2 million. Still, the miner says it, quote, remains on track to reach its 23 exahash per second goal for mining power deployed by near the middle of this year. The stock market took the report as positive, with Marathon stock up 9% for the day following earnings. But of course, that wasn't the big news in mining. In a bombshell announcement on Tuesday, the White House's Council of Economic Advisors proposed a punitively high 30% tax on the electricity used by crypto miners. In an attempt to justify the tax, known as the Digital Asset Mining Energy or DAME excise tax, the CEA said, quote, currently, crypto mining firms do not have to pay for the full cost they impose on others in the form of local environmental pollution, higher energy prices, and the impacts of increased greenhouse gas emissions on the climate. Now, while industry-based excise taxes are not unheard of, it's pretty rare for industries to be discriminated against using differential taxing of basic inputs like electricity. The concern for people outside Bitcoin should be that this kind of policy will open the door for even more draconian controls over electricity use, based on the opinion of the administration on any given day. If you're interested in that topic, go listen to Long Read Sunday on the main breakdown feed, as you will find something there that you will likely want to hear. Now, ignoring the outlook of the current federal government, state legislatures continue to forge ahead with permissive Bitcoin policy. Last week, Montana passed a bill to protect the right to mine Bitcoin. One of the first states to provide legal protections for miners, the legislation is designed to give them the right to operate, quote, without being subjected to undue discrimination or requirements. The legislation prohibits discriminatory electricity rates, prohibits local governments from using powers to curtail mining, and prohibits taxation on the use of cryptocurrency as a payment method. The legislation also confirms that digital assets are personal property with all of the associated protections. While the legislation only restrains state and local governments from discriminating against miners, the law is a powerful signaling tool to tell them that the state of Montana will protect their business. Heading over to Texas, two landmark legislative actions were taken this week. Firstly, the House passed a bill clarifying that fossil fuel wells can sell natural gas to on-site data centers, which are typically Bitcoin miners. This measure, which is already relatively common, prevents the gas from being flared into the atmosphere and can reduce carbon emissions associated with oil and gas exploration by up to 63%. Clarifying the legality and tax implications of this practice can put on-site Bitcoin miners on firmer footing and encourage more sites to use this method of emissions reduction. The bill has so far passed the House, so will need to be ratified by the Senate and the governor before it becomes law. But the indication that the Texas House is pro-Bitcoin mining is important in the current struggle for the Bitcoin mining industry in the Lone Star State. Last month, remember, the Texas Senate passed a bill to reverse certain tax incentives for some electricity-generating facilities. Now, the second major legislative action coming out of the Texas House this week was the passage of a bill which would enshrine Bitcoin in the state's Bill of Rights. The bill recognizes the rights of individuals to possess, retain, and utilize digital currencies. 139 votes were cast in favor of the bill, with just two opposed. Tom Glass, the director of Texas Constitutional Enforcement Group, writes, "Objective of adding this to the Texas Bill of Rights is to make a case in the federal judiciary to invoke the Ninth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which says that there are other natural rights besides those in the first eight amendments. If Texas recognizes, the Fed should under the Ninth. So now, if feds mess with Texans, we have a Ninth Amendment argument in the federal judiciary." But, of course, none of this was really why people were paying attention to mining this week. For the first time since 2017, Bitcoin fees actually exceeded the block reward. Amid the frenzy of speculation on BRC20 meme coins, several miners processed blocks this week with fees in excess of 6.25 Bitcoin, which is the current block reward. Now, of course, if you've spent any time in and around Bitcoin, the long-term viability and security of the network is one of the big questions that people often ask. Concern is that as the block reward diminishes, miners won't be adequately compensated for maintaining the network. In other words, that fees won't be able to do it on their own. Proponents of ordinals and these BRC20 tokens, which are driving up these fees, say that this high-fee speculative period could be a glimpse of what the fee environment looks like after the network has attracted further adoption. Average fees per transaction peaked at $30 on Tuesday after being consistently in around a dollar for the last 2 years. The mempool, where low-cost transactions wait to be processed, had 400,000 transactions in it at the height of congestion. Colin Harper, the head of content for mining pool Luxor Technologies, said that the last few months were a, quote, cool example of how, just when you think Bitcoin has become boring, there's something waiting around the corner that surprises everyone. He added that many people can now, quote, envision a future where we completely replace the subsidy with transaction fees, and many people thought that this was impossible before seeing something like this. Harper went on, quote, some doubted whether or not Bitcoin block space can have use cases outside of settling value. But now there are new uses for block space, and any use of block space where people are paying fees is good for Bitcoin in the long term. Now, those Bitcoin fees are beginning to moderate, although they still remain at levels not seen since the first half of 2021. And this, I think, brings us to the BRC20 debate. In many ways, this is part two of last week's primer, so if you haven't listened to that yet, I'd recommend you go check it out. So in this debate on Bitcoin Twitter, broadly speaking, very broadly speaking, there were two camps. On the one side were Bitcoiners concerned that high fees, particularly if they remain structurally high, would harm the Bitcoin use cases that have been built up over the years. On the other side were the, let's call them, free marketers, who believe that the only way to operate a system as radically open as Bitcoin is to offer up resources, in this case block space, to the highest bidder, absent any other concerns. So let's take an example from each side. Anita Posh, the founder of Bitcoin for Fairness, lamented the barriers that high fees place on her work encouraging Bitcoin adoption in Africa. She wrote, "Can anyone explain how I'm going to onboard people with these fees? Can't use on-chain, can't open channels, makes custodial Lightning the only option. And all that because some people think it's fun to quote-unquote break Bitcoin." On the other side was retired game developer John Ratcliffe, who pointed out that in the long term, Bitcoin infrastructure will need to be developed assuming that base layer transactions are expensive. Bitcoin, he wrote, is a settlement layer. It will transition to fee-based security to replace the block reward. In the future, the average Bitcoin transaction will be for a massive amount of value, hundreds of thousands of dollars, with high fees. Payment transactions will happen on different network layers, each offering different security models and trade-offs. Other layers will include things like the Lightning Network, federated sidechains, and someday perhaps non-federated decentralized sidechains, and mainstream payment services like Visa and MasterCard. Bitcoin is not a payment network. It is a network responsible for issuing and securing the currency, like a Federal Reserve type system. You have to separate the currency, Bitcoin, from the payment rails. Just as central banks issue and manage currencies but do not handle payments. Now, if you've seen my Twitter, you'll know my take on all this, which is that the most striking part about this debate so far is frankly just how valid all the arguments are and how reasonable the conversation is. It is absolutely the case that infrastructure needs to be built out that doesn't assume cheap Bitcoin base layer fees, and that no one is quote-unquote entitled to cheap Bitcoin transactions. At the same time, it's completely reasonable to be bummed out and take issue with what's driving those high fees at the moment. Willy Wu went right down the middle with his take, saying, "High fees as a consequence of ordinals has pros and cons. It's great for the security budget, but bad for nodes and decentralization. One day Bitcoin block rewards will go to zero and the network will fail unless fees become huge to pay for security. In my opinion, decentralization is more important right now. I would have preferred the impact of ordinals to have been a lot later when the security budget became more pressing. It would be at a time when decentralization is already anchored." Now, one interesting subset of the discussion was around the idea that this frenzied minting of BRC20 tokens was an attack on Bitcoin and perhaps opened up a need to change the protocol to reduce fees. For those of you who have been around for a while, this might have sparked some deja vu or some PTSD. Back in 2017, the Bitcoin network also experienced a fee spike. Blocks were congested, exchanges were having trouble processing transactions, and in December that year, the average transaction fee hit $55. That fee pileup happened in the background of the largest battle over the design of the Bitcoin protocol in the blockchain's history, which has come to be known as the block size wars. Proposals to increase the size of Bitcoin blocks had been around since 2015, but in 2017 they took on a whole new meaning as exchanges struggled to process transactions in a timely and cost-efficient manner. It appeared to some that Bitcoin was doomed if it couldn't handle the rush of new users that arrived in 2017. At the core of the argument was a trade-off between efficiency and decentralization, with one of the biggest costs being pushing the ability to operate a node out of the hands of consumer computer hardware. Now, there were tons of lessons to come out of the block size war, including around who really has power in the ecosystem and it not lying with the big miners and the big corporations. Of course, ultimately, the resolution for the main Bitcoin chain was that block sizes remained small, and scaling was provided instead by upgrades to infrastructure. Batching of transactions became common practice with the help of the SegWit upgrade, which dramatically reduced block space used by exchanges. And we also saw the first layer two solutions arise out of this dispute, including the Lightning Network, which was first introduced in a 2016 paper and became operational in 2017. Still though, when push comes to shove, even among those who don't particularly care for what Bitcoin is being used for at the moment, the idea that this fee spike might require us to reconsider block size and other network or protocol design issues was pretty much soundly rejected by Bitcoiners far and wide. Dylan LeClaire, for example, tweeted, "Your inherent desire for human intervention at every turn is exactly what Bitcoin solved. Please just shut up." Samson Mao pointed out that he's happy to wait his turn to use the most secure settlement network ever devised if the fees are too high. He said, "Didn't need to make any Bitcoin transactions during the few days of high fees. Even if I had to, I'd be fine with waiting days or weeks to get a confirmation. Lightning and Liquid work well for anything urgent, low time preference for the rest." Dan Held, eyes firmly fixed on the future, reminded us of how this story inevitably ends, saying, "If you're upset about high fees on Bitcoin, then you never understood how Bitcoin was going to scale." Now, what about Lightning? Well, during the fee frenzy, Lightning Network transactions hit their all-time high. Although Lightning has been on a tear this year, and all-time highs have been a common occurrence. Still, there were challenges, primarily around the cost of opening and closing Lightning channels, which require transactions to be processed on the base layer of Bitcoin. Fiat Joff, the pseudonymous creator of Nostr, commented on Sunday that the high fee environment was breaking a lot of the infrastructure. They said, "The recent spike in fees caused by ordinals and BRC20 coinery has shown that Lightning isn't a silver bullet. Channels are too fragile. It costs a lot to open a channel under a high fee environment, to run a routing node, and so on." Now, others saw this as a rallying cry. BitMask developer Hunter Beast wrote, "Lightning was always supposed to be the answer to FUD around high fee rates. If we want to prove the big blockers wrong, we need to build. There's a lot of Lightning bears out there claiming the ecosystem isn't ready. Maybe they're right. It's important to take such criticism seriously and to take steps to mitigate against risks, especially regarding the opportunity cost around persistent downtime. The Lightning ecosystem is getting a stress test. Consider this a pregame to the next bull market. We have another year till the next halvening, maybe another year and more for liquidity to dry up in markets compared to demand. But the shrimps keep stacking and Bitcoiners are relentless. And the system needs to handle that stress for it to succeed as a global medium of exchange to rival petro fiat and dirty gold. These questions around Lightning reliability shouldn't be dismissed as FUD, but the only legitimate FUD is FUD that has no decent answer. Bitcoin is worth it, and it's up to us application builders and wallet users and node runners to see that the Lightning bears are proven wrong. That is, I think, the perfect message to end on. And to me, this week was validation of the idea that all of this right now is a real make Bitcoin stronger kind of moment. It is giving us, yes, a glimpse of new possibilities, easing some people's concerns about the long-term fee market, but it's also showing how much there is still to be built. I'm with Hunter here. It's up to the people who are building in this ecosystem to prove the skeptics wrong and build what the Bitcoin ecosystem actually needs. I'm excited to continue featuring the people who are doing exactly that on Bitcoin Builders. So as always, a big thank you again to my sponsor, In Wolf's Clothing. Wolf, the first startup accelerator for Bitcoin and Lightning companies, wolfnyc.com. And a big thanks to you guys for listening. Until tomorrow, be safe and take care of each other. Peace.